Again, I'm not Tom. I wish I were. Tom is Tucson's Anthony Bourdain. He is in Tampa trying to repair relations, and this is my take on it because I talked to him last week. He and his colleagues, his professional colleagues, are trying to repair relations on the tourism side between Canada and Mexico and the United States. And so he's down there doing the best he can to try to salvage whatever he thinks he can do.
The Henry Clay of North America. That's right. In the 21st century.
And shuttle diplomacy. So
that's
he's
right.
Henry Kissinger, too.
Henry Clay.
7:04. I'm not going to Paris anytime soon. My daughter went there a couple of years ago. She flew over and wasn't that airline that she took, but very cheap airline called Norsk.
Okay.
And she got over there for like $150.
Wow. Okay.
So, I'm not going.
No
I'm
frills.
Not going. You know, before we get to our very special guest, who I think we are kindred spirits, I can't prove it because he's on the other side of the world to me. I've never even been there where he is. He made his living and grew up, I'm guessing. This Bitcoin story that you had about the ATM scam hitting Arizona residents, I've got a story about that, and I'll make it quick. In 2011, I was an early adopter of Bitcoin.
Okay.
I bought 10 of them for $150 a piece.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
$150, so $1,500, and I left them in the bank at that time, which was called Mt. Gox, G-O-X in Japan.
Uh-huh.
Mt. Gox got hacked. I lost all the Bitcoins. Everyone lost all their Bitcoins that had them stored there in that repository. If I would have just taken them out and put them in a little flash drive wallet,
right,
I'd have had over $1 million today. A million that I don't have today. So food for thought. Always make sure that if you're an early adopter, CYA.
The great Mt. Gox incident.
Correct. It's still legendary. So let's get right to it. 7:05, almost 7:06. And with us this morning from New Jersey and from, I'm guessing, his business in New Jersey, RA Auto, Ron Ananian, the car doctor. Ron's show airs from 5 to 7 a.m. on Saturday mornings on KVOI. It's appointment radio for yours truly. I can't tell you, Ron, how much I've learned from your show over the last several years, just listening to it. I wish it ran a little later, but I get up at 5 just to make sure I get you every Saturday.
I appreciate that, Alan. Good morning. Thank you for having me today. It's great to be here.
Ron, because this is a travel and tourism show, we'll branch off a little bit into other things, but I've got to keep it between the rails at least for a little while.
Sure.
And I remember you telling me that you were going to be a guest on another radio station somewhere back east about summer car care. And so why don't we go ahead and lift a page from your premise with that and tell us what we need to, you know, the regular person, pretend you're talking to a golden retriever.
Sure. You know, listen, it's pretty simple. All right. Now, let me qualify myself. I've only been fixing cars this side of 50 years, so I don't really know if this is my career forever. I'm going to give it a shot. So I speak from what I see on a daily basis. Some of the things to get your car ready for a trip or to decide if it's roadworthy are pretty basic and obvious. Sit in the car. Look up on the left, because that seems to be where they all are now, those oil change stickers. If all you can read on the oil change sticker is the name and the place that last did it, you can't read any of the other information because it's faded, chances are you're due for an oil change. And we see that a lot, and it's kind of mind-boggling. So the number one thing I want people to do to be self-empowered is, when was your last service? When was the last time your car had an oil change, tire pressure? So, you know, looked underneath it, a physical inspection and evaluation. The number one thing I always talk about when I talk about travel, Alan, is the road is a very unforgiving place. And it's breaking down is no fun. A flat tire is no fun. None of it's any fun. And it can be a little dangerous in certain scenarios. So you want to make sure your car is as gung-ho and ready to go as you possibly can. And looking at that oil change sticker is a good place to start.
Ron, with these synthetic oils that mainly now there is no regular oil anymore. They're all blended synthetics, it seems. I can't find just a straight oil anymore for my car.
Right.
And I have older cars. You know, I drive daily drivers that are, you know, 20 years old, and I keep them going.
What's your daily driver, Alan?
I have two O2 Priuses.
Okay, and those are great cars.
They are, as long as you keep those batteries in check.
Right.
And I've got a guy to pull out the bad cells and put the good ones back in when they go.
You know, the Toyota Prius, you know, not to branch off here, but I'll be quick. The Toyota Prius was an example of over-engineering. Those cars don't break. It's an oil change, it's front brakes, and it's an occasional exhaust pipe. Back here in the East. I don't know what it is in Arizona because do you guys get snow?
Every 5-10 years, and it melts as it comes down. So, and you knew the answer to that question. You're a great talk show host.
That's a great car. That car can go another 10 years, and that's an example of over engineering. You haven't even put rear brakes on those cars yet, have you?
No, I haven't. But I had to put a cat. I had to put a cat on it because those cats are very valuable to meth heads because there are two of them.
Stole it?
Yeah, there are two of them. So I had to find the cat, put it on, and then I riveted a cage over the cat so that they can't get it.
Right.
Next time.
Right. Yeah, next time.
Yeah.
So back to our discussion, right? Oil changes. Then we're getting ready to go on a road. We're leaving 2 weeks from today. Don't wait till the Friday before the Saturday that you're leaving to take the car in. Be fair. You know, I can tell you this. There is a parts problem that's been brewing for the past couple of years. There's a quality of parts issue for replacement parts. There's an availability of parts issue that's becoming more predominant in the last couple of months. So, you know, that old trusted repair shop that you're going to that maybe was able to turn the car around in a day or two, you know, it might be 2 weeks now. So you don't want to let things go to the last minute. I know it's hard. But, you know, a lot of us are procrastinators, but it's just the way of the world. It's the truth.
I'll bet Ron, I'll bet that you, as the owner of your auto shop, RA Auto, in which town in New Jersey is it in, Ron?
Waldwick, New Jersey, but don't tell anybody. We keep it a secret.
Okay. Well, I'm not coming out there for an oil change. I promise you that. Because I'd have to change it coming back. I have the feeling, because you said that there's a really critical crisis on parts. These tariffs may or may not help that, right? Probably not help.
They are going to make it worse. You know, and some of what I speak is tariff related. The price of things have started to creep up. We've seen brake parts, brake pads, and rotors creep up about 3.5-4% in the last 2 weeks, which it kind of doesn't make any sense to me because I don't think any of the parts from China have even hit American shores yet to go through the distribution chain to you know, actually be here. So I think they're already raising prices, and the answer question is why, and the answer is because they can.
Yeah, profit.
Profit. It's all about making a buck.
I have to also think, Ron, that because you're the chief cook and bottle washer there, that your job every day, probably job one, is for you to source parts for cars that are hard to find. And I remember hearing you say on your show, we found this part in Texas. We found this part in Michigan, you know, for an 08 or a 10 Ford Edge or, you know, you said Thunderbirds, 03s and 04s, great cars, but you can't find parts for them.
Can't find parts for them. Well, the reason for that is just a piece of automotive useless trivia that I keep in my head, is because the 02 to 05 Thunderbird was a conglomeration between Ford Motor Company, Jaguar, and Volvo. All three car companies were involved in the development of that vehicle, and now 20 some odd years later, all the parts are gone for it, which is a shame. I own an 02. And it's a fun car, and a convertible drop top. It's just a great thing to buzz around in.
I looked at one the other day, and I remembered what you said, that the parts were impossible to find. I looked over at Car World here on Oracle Road. They have a couple of them, and both of them were $10,000 a piece. And I thought, gee, that's cheap if I could find the parts to repair it.
Right.
You know.
Well, you know, the way to look at it, and this is sort of a fun thing. You think about travel and vacations. Look at the segue back. It's almost like I do radio. You think about travel and vacation, what it costs to go on a good vacation. Maybe buying a $10,000 Thunderbird driving it for 4 months and then selling it. It's an escape, right?
Yeah.
Little top-down action, little cruising with the wind in your hair. It's a fun car. It's really a fun car, I'll tell you. It's at the end of a long week. There's nothing better than going for a ride in the Bird.
So when we get ready to go on vacation, make sure your oil's checked. And, you know, it's not just mileage. It's also time.
Right. Time counts. You know, when was the last time tires were rotated? So a lot of this we can do ourselves because we're trying to keep records. We're trying to be good record keepers. You know, look at the dashboard. You know, get in the car, turn on the key, but don't start it. Do all the light bulbs that normally light up, light up? Do you see a check engine light? Do you see an ABS light? You know, do your own bulb check because technically that's what the car is doing. I don't know if anybody realizes that, but when you go from key off to key on, engine not running, that is bulb check position. The manufacturers are expecting you at some point or level to sit there and look at your dashboard and say, hey, do I see all the normal things I normally see? Yeah, everything's there. Now start it up. Now, if we're looking at the car, and I see this a lot too, Alan, and I don't understand that. You know, I see this on new customers because existing customers know better, and we explain it to them why it's bad. Is the check engine light on? How long has it been on? It's not meant to be an ornament or a decoration device. It's meant to warn you that there's a problem with the vehicle, and it needs to be addressed. And, you know, that can be a big issue. Check engine lights don't change color, don't change frequency. The only thing they'll do other than stay on continuously is blink real quick if there's a serious engine misfire, something in the way the vehicle is running on which cylinder. But, you know, we see cars from first-time customers. How long has a check engine light been on? About a year and a half.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a big, that's a problem. You know, that's a very big story to unravel.
Would you say most of your clientele are female as a percentage?
You know, it's funny you say that, and I don't know why, but in all my years on radio, and even in the shop, yeah, now that you mention it, I track higher with a female audience, with a female listenership, and I think it's because I explain things.
Well, and I think, too, they trust you.
Yeah, I get that. I get that. But you know what? That goes back a long ways. That goes back to my teaching days. You know, that goes back to when I was an instructor. You know, women want to know about how to keep themselves safe in their car. And I always attack it from that perspective. You know, a guy gets stuck on the side of the road. Here, let's tell the story this way, right? Because this is where we were going to go next. How old is your battery? Okay, because you're going on vacation, and the last thing you need to do is pull into a rest stop after a four-hour ride through the Arizona heat, and the battery fails, because batteries fail more in heat than they do in cold, believe it or not. But, you know, for a guy to have a dead battery, it's an adventure. For a woman, it could be a bad situation.
Yeah.
And, you know, you want to avoid that. You know,
well,
so important.
Ron, batteries are at least $150 to $250 for a decent one. And,
yep.
You know, you may have that budgeted for your vacation. It may be a pretty tight vacation. And so they just think, well, I can squeeze one more trip out of it.
You know, everybody wants to squeeze one more trip. Everybody wants to get one more month.
Everybody wants, Ronnie.
Sneak by. You know what my answer is, Alan? I want to be 18 and lose another 20 pounds, and I can handle the 20 pounds. I don't know about being 18 again. It's just not going to happen. So you got to live in reality is where I go with that.
So you're a preventive guy because that's your business. But on the other side of it, I know you get the fact that this stuff's expensive. You're not cheap either, and you deserve to make a great living, and I hope you do, and I think you do. But it's just not ever planned to be in the budget to fix your car. It's just turn on and go, and if it breaks, we worry about it then.
Well, look at the wording. Look at the way we're programmed as a society, all right? I just bought a new car, so I don't have to spend any money on it.
Bingo.
Look at the thought process.
It's someone else's problem.
Yeah, it's you know, and I never have to fix it. How come we buy a house, right, and when the water heater breaks, you know, we can find that $900 because we all want hot water. When the air conditioning breaks, how important is air conditioning in Tucson, Arizona?
Kind of important.
You know, yeah, when the air conditioning breaks, we can always find that $2,000 or whatever the number is. But, boy, I'll tell you what, the car needs four tires. Yeah, I can sneak it out a little bit.
Sneak it out. That's right.
You know, until I'm on the side of the road. And, you know, that's a problem.
It is a problem. 718, the car doctor is with us. He's on from 5 to 7 in the morning on Saturdays on KVOI. Roddy, give us your phone number just in case. 1-888-560-what?
888-560-9900.
Give him a call.
855-560-9900.
Give him a call. It'll go to voicemail, and the great producer Tom Ray, who runs Ron's show, will get back to you lightning fast like he did to me. If you have a car question, we may even take a couple questions if you want. Ron is brilliant with this stuff, and I don't know if we'll get a call on it or not because we didn't advertise that. We just advertised getting your car ready for tourism in Southern Arizona and beyond. But we'll take the break. Be right back. 719. I'm Big Al with Ron Ananian on The Voice. Paul Simon with, I am favored that song quite a bit because my name's Al. And his name is Ron Ananian, the car doctor that airs on Saturdays here from 5 to 7 a.m. on KVOI. Great show. I'm a hardcore listener of your show, Ron. You were talking about batteries giving it up because of the Arizona heat. I learned last week on your show that vibration is probably overall the number one cause nationwide of battery failure.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And you know, everything starts, no pun intended, with a battery today. We see so many strange problems from erratic batteries, batteries that 1 minute are sitting at 12.5 volts because, believe it or not, a 12-volt battery has to have a minimum of 12.5 volts to be considered good. A battery with 12.2 volts is actually on the a failed battery in industry standards for a lot of reasons. But we see erratic voltage out of a battery, and that vehicle will do some very funny things because it tends to drag down the whole vehicle. And, you know, keep in mind, too, and a little of the technical stuff, Hondas, for example, you know, computer-control their alternators, like a lot of vehicle manufacturers. You can actually see a Honda go down the road at 12.5 volts on the charging system until it sees enough of a load or a demand, and it starts to bump up the alternator charge rate. And, you know, you start to look at the demands and rigors that are placed on batteries. It's not, you know, this isn't your father's 63 Chevy Impala anymore. It's all in the interest of emissions and mileage and longevity, and they do some very different things with electrical systems and charging systems today. So that battery is key.
That battery hides a lot of symptoms, I think, too, on cars.
Yes, absolutely.
And so if it's 3 years old, because usually they'll only warranty them out here for about 3 years if you buy a new one from like an AutoZone or a checker, that's after 3 years, you're living on borrowed time.
Well, I think 3 to 5, it depends. Now, here we go. It depends on the car. If you're driving a Honda, most Hondas have Group 51 batteries, and I'm not knocking Hondas, Alan. I think Honda makes a great car, all right? But if you're driving a Honda and it's got a Group 51 battery, after 3 years, I think you're on borrowed time is an absolute true statement, because the Group 51 is the highest failure rate battery we see in the market. You know, we do more Group 51s in a given year than any other size. And a group just means the size, the physical dimension of the battery. It's, you know, just to fit that space under the hood of a Honda. And that Group 51 is just a high failure rate battery. Talk to the Honda dealer. Ask them how many batteries they do. It's staggering. We've got a Honda dealership out here that on a given busy day will do 250 batteries in the middle of winter in a day.
Is that just because, Ron, it's not a high failure rate, is it? It's just because there's a lot of them out there.
Well, and there's a lot of them out there, but, you know, for all those batteries to go bad in what I consider a short time period, but I'll tell you this, all right, if you bring me a car, you know, a Ford or a GM or a Chrysler or something, and it's a 4.5-year-old battery, there's no point to test it. You know, it's 6 months away from 5 years. What are we waiting for?
To save that $200.
To save that $200 to be stuck on the side of the road because they think they can change the battery in their driveway, which on a lot of vehicles you can't anymore because you'll put the battery in, you'll bolt it up, you'll put it in, you'll try and do some kind of a memory saver because cars have operating characteristics now. I'm trying to stay in my guidelines here, Alan. you know, but you know, a car picks up operating characteristics. If Alan drove the car and then Ron drove the car and then my engineer Tom drove the car, you know, over time, it's going to learn our driving habits and characteristics and how we accelerate and deaccelerate, create shift patterns in the transmission and behavioral characteristics. And then you disconnect the battery and all that's gone. And funny things can happen. So you want to memory save it is my point. And then when you're done memory save it so that the computer doesn't lose its memory and you got your nice fresh battery in there, sometimes you need a scan tool. You have to tell it, hey, I changed the battery, and do a BMI or battery reset. Whole different conversation.
It is, and I got to tell you that I don't have a scan tool. You talk about them all the time on your show. Do you have a scan tool? Did you use a scan tool? And I would say 95%, maybe even higher, the amount of people that don't have a scan tool, which would probably be great if you did have one, but I think that probably most people can't afford one.
Yep. Yeah, no, you can't. Scan tools are an entry-level decent scan tool is $500 today.
Yeah. Ron, can you hang around? We're going to pull over and, as you say, take a break.
Sure, I'll be here.
Ron Ananian, Big Al on The Voice. 7:35. Thanks, Willie. I'm Big Al along with the car doctor, Ron Ananian, who has, as you just heard, his show running on Saturday mornings from 5 to 7 a.m. A little early for a lot of people, but people that like to work on their own cars or like to learn stuff, I would suggest you consider just lying in bed, turning that radio on or streaming it to 10:30. And listen to Ron just go stream of mind on a stream of consciousness on a lot of stuff. I specifically enjoy at the top of the hour when you just go stream of consciousness on the things that happened in the shop the past week. Always interesting.
Yeah, everybody seems to like that, Alan, and that really is off the top of my head. Somebody once asked me, they said, you know, what kind of prep time? How long does it take you to prep the show? And I looked at them, I looked at my watch, and I said, you want me to do it now? I went to the, you know, Hard Knocks School of Radio Broadcasting where they threw me in a room, turned on the microphone and said, talk.
Yeah.
So I learned how to do it off the top of my head, but they're all real stories, things from the shop that happen on a weekly basis. This week we would talk about, you know, if we were going to do the show this week, I've got interviews set up this week because I'm going to go see my grandchildren, to be honest. Or is that next week? I forget which, but regardless, we talk about all the new parts we got this week that were bad out of the box or, you know, missing pieces or damaged. We waited 3 days to get an air conditioning compressor for a car this week. Beautiful compressor from Denso, and I like Denso. Denso's a good product, but everybody's got their issues. Took this brand-new $900 AC compressor out of the box, and the electrical connector where it plugs in was smashed.
The Molex connector, or is it a different connector?
Yeah, well, it's the connector, you know, that feeds power off the engine, off the vehicle wiring harness.
Yeah.
So I had to swap out the connector because I can't get another compressor. I had to beg, borrow, and steal to get this one.
Yeah.
And, you know, what do you tell the person that needs their car? She's leaving for North Carolina in 2 days.
Right.
And it took me 3 days to get the, you know, it's those are the battles that go on every day that every repair shop in the country goes through. Every day.
And so, again, just to repeat what you said, make sure if you're going to take a trip, get it in early. Get it in earlier than you even think to get it in to have it checked out.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, everybody should have a trusted mechanic. I know it's hard. But there's something wrong with the person. When somebody walks into my door at the shop and they're in their mid-40s and they go, you know, I've been looking for a mechanic my whole life and I haven't been able to find one. And I always ask them, how long have you been driving? About 23 years. So in 23 years, you've been through how many mechanics? And they'll tell me 7. And I kind of point out, you know, 7 mechanics, 23 years, what's the common denominator? Are you giving the person a chance to do their job? I'm not saying there aren't bad mechanics. There's bad mechanics. There's bad carpenters. There's bad lawyers. There's bad everybody. But there are decent people out there that are trying to make a living, trying to do it right, not by somebody's perceived values, if you know what I'm saying. Let the guy do his job. Let him show you how brilliant he can be and see the results. It's important.
7:38 on the Morning Voice. This show, Tom Moulton's show on Thursdays, deals with travel and tourism in southern Arizona and Arizona in general, and we're stretching it a little bit to just make sure that you have a vehicle that's going to make it to wherever you want to be. If you're going on vacation, seeing the sights, maybe going to the Grand Canyon. Summertime is always the worst time for travel here in Arizona because of the possibility of you having a breakdown. So we are grateful for Ron to be here with us today. Ron, we're going to take it a little further and just ask you about when you see the check engine light and it's been on for, you said, a year and a half. I understand that that may be an exaggeration. A lot of people just go to checker and see that it's just an ignition, a misfire on cylinder 3. Probably needs a spark plug. I'm good to go for another 6 months, and then when I get the $150 to $200, I'll change all the plugs. Not a great idea, but you understand it, don't you?
I understand why they do that, but first let's clarify something, okay? A couple of things. A check engine light is designed by law. The Clean Air Act of 1991, it's ancient history. The Clean Air Act of 1991, which was put into effect in 1996, all right, mandated that if a vehicle exceeds 1.5 times the legal limits of federal emissions, it will turn on a check engine light. So anything in a monitored or watched system that causes a vehicle to be out of what we call emission compliance turns on the check engine light, number one. Number two, some cars, most cars actually, once it sets a problem, we'll use your example, a misfire. Once it sees a misfire, it is no longer going to check the catalytic converter to see if it's operational or healthy. It's no longer going to do certain evaporative emissions tests, you know, the gas cap codes that everybody runs crazy about. So leaving a check engine light on for that year and a half, which actually isn't an exaggeration, we've seen it. We see it quite often, actually, sadly. Now we fix that original misfire problem. And the answer is my car fixed? The answer is when it runs all of its self-tests, all of its monitor tests, and they all run to completion, and there are no fault codes, then I know your car is fixed. And I can't answer it. You can't answer it. Mr. Goodwrench couldn't answer it. If we dug up Walter P. Chrysler, he couldn't answer it. It's just the way the software and the computers are set up. So the guy that's leaving that check engine light on it, look, I get it. You know, you go to an auto parts house, you go to Checkers, you go to AutoZone, you get the check engine light tested. It's not saying, if we get a misfire fault, it doesn't say ignition. I will correct you, Alan. It doesn't say ignition. It says misfire.
Misfire, yeah. Cylinder 3.
Right?
Yeah, cylinder
right.
3.
Do you own a lawnmower?
Never. We don't we don't cut grass in Arizona,
right?
We
don't have grass in Arizona. But you have to have some piece of small operational equipment, right?
Sure.
A little one-cylinder something.
Sure.
Right. If it has a misfire, why does it miss? It's going to miss for one of three reasons. It's got an ignition miss, agreed. It could have a fuel system miss. The engine's running lean, a plugged-up carburetor or a problem with fuel delivery. Or it could have a mechanical problem, burnt valve, internal engine problem, that kind of a thing. So that misfire never says put a spark plug in it. It says misfire, and it needs to be diagnosed. Or, like you say, you take the guess, you put a spark plug in it. But if a spark plug is bad, why did it go bad? Is there a carbon deposit issue in the engine? Is it so badly worn that that was the first plug to fail, and now you start to chase all the spark plugs around? And, you know, one at a time, we're going to go through this torture. So it really comes back to where we started our conversation today, about scheduled maintenance, talking to our trusted mechanic. I'm going on the road. We spend a lot of time, right? To go away on a trip, we call the hotel, or we call the camping site. You know, we call the airlines for reservations. We do all this prep, and then we pile into the car and say, "Yeah, it's good. No big deal."
Always a mistake.
Yeah, always a mistake. Always a big mistake. And then you're on the side of the road, if your partner's with you, maybe they're telling you, I told you to get this car into the repair shop. What's wrong with you?
Especially when the kids are in the car, too. I mean, it's just,
right.
You're
right.
Kicking yourself that you just didn't go to someone like you a couple of weeks before pay the $100-$150 for the all car check or whatever whatever it's called.
Get it looked at. Yeah. It's just so much easier. I always think of the poor guy. You know, here in New Jersey, a real quick story. I'm going to the chiropractor one Friday night, and I'm pulling up on. There's a traffic jam at the light. And there's a Honda that's stalled, and I'm inching my way up to the guy, and everybody's blowing their horn. And the guy keeps cranking it. It's one of those warm summer nights. The windows are down. It's not that hot. And I pull up next to it, and the wife is yelling at this poor guy. I told you to get this car in, and what's wrong with you? And you didn't get it checked out. And he's cranking. And the husband puts his head on the steering wheel, and he says, "My God, where's the car doctor when you need him?" I swear, it was the funniest thing, because that's the way my life is. Life is the universe always aligns me in these situations. Where's the car doctor when you need him? And I looked at him and I said, "Here I am."
Here
and the
I
wife
am.
Looked over at me, and she goes, "Oh my God, I didn't know it was you." And I said, "Hey, it's got a broken timing belt. Stop cranking it. You're going to break something. The light changed. I got to go see you." The husband mouths thank you to me, and I pull away.
Call AAA.
I always think of that. You know, it just breaking down just creates so much stress. You know, it's just such a problem.
And out here in Arizona, we have wide open spaces, not so much back where you are, but out here, if you break down, especially between Phoenix and Tucson, not as bad normally as what it would be if you're 120 miles between two other cities, but it's bad enough, especially when the wind blows, you got dust and heat, which is not probably something you've ever experienced. You have heat and dust at the same time, like a lot of it, of both. Not a great idea. And, you know, it's just, I hate to be, in my life, I've never tried to do in my job being a nervous Nelly and telling people what to do with their vehicle, but or with anything else. But you really do need to take it seriously and not just let it go until you see something that's wrong. Even if there's nothing wrong, it's not going to hurt to just go take it and have it looked at.
Right. You know, a true professional will look that car over and, you know, make that car safe as if their family was going to ride in it. Every mechanic I've ever hired in my lifetime, every time I've looked at a car, I always look at it from, would I feel safe riding in this car, or just as importantly, if my wife and kids were in a car next to this car on the highway doing 65 miles an hour? And, you know, that's a 2-ton missile going down the road. The wheel falls off, the tie rod breaks, you know, the engine stops, and there's an 18-wheeler right behind it. It's a recipe for disaster. And I don't want to scare anybody, but just some, you know, it's kind of amazing the auto industry runs as good as it does on a regular basis with so many moving pieces. There's such an opportunity for issues. Just getting the car checked out puts you light years ahead of having a potential problem and keeps you safe.
To quote an old dude that is probably now a fairly decent friend, we're going to pull over for a minute. 7:46 on The Voice. Tom Moulton is in Tampa, Florida, trying to adjust the tourism issue that we may be having between Canada, Mexico, and the U.S. Seriously, he said, I'm going down there to talk to Canadians and Mexican tour operators and people that are in the tourism business to see if some of this stuff can be salvaged, which is very laudable for him to do. So I'm filling in this Thursday for him. He'll be back probably next Thursday. Dr. Ackerley is here on Fridays, as always. We will be back on The Morning Voice, 7:47. 7:52 on The Morning Voice. I'm Big Al, along with Ron Ananey and the Car Doctor, heard every Saturday morning from 5 to 7 on KVOI, 10:30 a.m. Ron, we've talked a lot about preventive maintenance, probably a little too much for some people. What do you like on different cars these days in terms of features? And what don't you like about cars these days with different features? What are the higher and lower maintenance things that are good and bad ideas?
I think, fluids are, where do I start that question? I like the safety features in today's cars. Who couldn't, right? The electronics are good. For that vehicle that's up to 7-8 years old, we see vehicles, for example, not to pick on a car line, but we'll have to, the German cars. You keep an Audi past year 7 and 8, it can get to be expensive. The electronics can be prohibitive. You know, it's you want to lease the German car experience, not own the German car experience, we always say, you know, because some of those features get to be costly. But, you know, they're great cars to drive. You just got to be prepared. You got to have the budget and the pocketbook. You know, you can't go in buying thinking you're buying an economy car when you do something like that. You know, the thing that probably takes most cars out of the realm of do I repair it or replace it is the electronics. And then its major component is drivetrain repair. You know, I don't know that it's necessarily features. If the electronics hold up, it's a great car. But, for example, we looked at we had a customer purchase a 2016 Ford Fusion this week with 165,000 miles on it. Nice car, clean car, white, nice interior, first-time driver, 17-year-old daughter. And like I said to them, the speech at the counter was, great car, keep up on the maintenance, keep doing the oil changes and the fluids. But if the transmission were to fail in that, in New Jersey dollars, that's $6,000, $6,500 all day long. It's a major repair. And, you know, you paid $16,000 for the car. Do you put over a third of what you paid into the car in the way of a transmission? Because what if? What if there's an engine problem? Then where do you go?
Ron, I kind of know what the answer is here. What's your opinion on electric vehicles?
I don't think we have enough time left.
Well, I mean, you're going to boil it down. I don't think you like them too much, and that's okay, but just tell me why you don't.
I think they have their place. I don't like them because I think we're being sold a bill of goods. It's not practical. You know, you start to run the numbers. How long does it take that diesel bulldozer to dig up enough raw material to make one battery? And how much raw material is it? You know, it's just the numbers and the math don't work. Time and time again, every study says the point where an EV vehicle becomes carbon neutral or carbon positive, meaning that it hasn't taken from the environment, is somewhere around that 60,000-mile mark. That's an awful lot of miles for what we're trying to achieve. I also look at, you know, in practicality. We go out to Pittsburgh to see the grandchildren. We drive through a little town called Altoona. Nice little town, nestled in the Alleghenies. And I always turn to my wife every time and I say, when they can make enough electricity and figure out how to get it over the Allegheny Mountains and feed Altoona, we'll have EV vehicles. But until then, it's a pipe dream. It's not practical. Start looking at the number of vehicles on the road when you're out traveling this summer, right? And just close your eyes, and not while you're driving, but just close your eyes and imagine every one of those is an EV. Pull into a service station, and now, you know, it's a gas station that takes roughly 5 minutes to fill a car with fuel. So you can do 12 vehicles per pump per hour. You know, it takes an EV 20 minutes. You can do 3 vehicles per charging station per hour, and that's a high rate of charge, and that may not be maximum charge. Start doing the math. How are you going to support all these vehicles? Do I think EVs have their place? Yes. I think a route vehicle. I think maybe for you know, the mail person, the police, if they're doing patrol, not necessarily high-speed pursuit. If you're on a, you know, you're the building inspector for the town of Tucson and you're driving a pre-described route, but to use them on an everyday basis, I think that's a future that's pretty far off until a lot of things change in the way of economy and technology.
Well, we're out of time. You know what that's like. You live that dream four or five times every week.
Yep. Let me just jump in real quick, Alan. Everybody should get out to cardoctorshow.com if they want more information. We got a lot going on there, and it'll keep everybody happy. All right, kiddo?
You have a great one, and good mechanics aren't expensive.
They're priceless, baby. They're priceless.
See ya. 803, Tom is in Tampa right now. Tom's in Tampa. That's a new hashtag I'm going to just leave there. He is basic. I see him right now with his arms extended because we're on a Zoom. Tom has graciously allowed us to let us use his Zoom account to host a meeting to talk to our next guest, who is Eric Snyder. He lives halfway between Tucson and Phoenix, Casa Grande, arguably the next big city for continued growth. And someday, maybe in my lifetime, we'll see Phoenix and Tucson connect because of Casa Grande. I mean, geographically speaking. Eric, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you? Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm I'm okay, Eric. I am constantly amazed at the little engine that could of Casa Grande and what you guys are able to pull off there.
Yes, yeah, we are definitely on the map and growing for sure.
Now, you know, Tom always likes to ask about your background and what you're prepared to do and what got you where you're at. So let's start there.
Oh, sure, yeah. My previous career was in hospitality management. I spent 17 years in the hotel industries, primarily in the Las Vegas and the LA County areas, and moved out here. My parents have been living out here in the Casa Grande area for 30 plus years, and finally made the move out here about 5 years ago. And I was in the title and escrow business, and I was an ambassador for the chamber. And I've always been an advocate of the Chamber of Commerce's, and I've always been involved in the tourism and marketing manager position opened up about a year ago. And I already knew everyone here. And so it was just kind of a win-win. And it just takes me back to my tourism days.
You know, I have to tell you, no one that has lived in Tucson less than a year knows that Casa Grande has the Lucid Motor plant.
Yeah.
You guys are also preparing to have like a big train switching yard near you guys.
Correct, yes.
There are so many big things planned in or around Casa Grande, and I think it's logistically beautiful because of the I-8, I-10 convergence right there.
Right, and that's going to be expanding also.
What do you have planned for the I-8, I-10 convergence that you can talk about?
Well, that's more of a city project, so there's really not much I'm involved with in that. I just kind of hear what goes out in the local news or the press releases. So anything that's already out there in the news is really, there's not much more for me to update regarding that project.
Tell us a little bit about I would say it's the city of Casa Grande. How many people are in Casa Grande, the city?
Full-time residents, we have about 65,000. That gets up with winter visitors in the upwards of 75 to, I would say in the next year or two, we'll be hitting 80,000 with winter visitors. My prediction only.
Do you guys have an employment issue there getting qualified people, or are you guys fully employed up there?
I think the city itself struggles just like any other city with employment, but I think with Lucid and the different manufacturers that are coming in and they're bringing in, they're not just bringing in their own employment, but they also are hiring within the area. And we have a great partnership with Central Arizona College that is a very well-qualified, well-known junior college. And I think with that, I think we don't have too many employment issues. But again, that's the Chamber of Commerce is a great partner with the city, but we're not really the city. So, yeah, that's we don't participate in too much of that either.
What is the biggest knock on Casa Grande? And I'll tell you what I think it is. So it may be an easy answer for you. Getting off at the Florence Highway and driving 6 miles into the town. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, if you're coming into the historic downtown Casa Grande, yes, that is correct. It would be very similar to exiting off Grant Avenue in Tucson and, you know, driving all the way out to Tejada Verde. You know, it's the same principle, but once you're in on Florence Boulevard, there's a lot more than just the historic downtown. You have a lot of shopping. We have a lot of things going on along Florence Boulevard from that Promenade Mall right there on the east side of the 10 there. And then all the way to the downtown Casa Grande. So it is a little bit of a drive to downtown Casa Grande. However, there's many, many shops and centers and grocery stores along the way to stop off.
Absolutely. It's the equivalent, and I'm not talking old school and out of school here. It's basically the Ina Road of Casa Grande, because you got everything right there. Every Popeyes, every Arco, every Dairy Queen, every Discount Tire. You even have Banner Hospital, their little satellite, well, big satellite hospital, sitting on Florence Boulevard in Casa Grande. And I shouldn't say Casa Grande. I should say Casa Grande, right?
Yeah, it just really depends on how long you've lived here, I think. As I think if you were born and raised here, went to school here, if you have relatives here, if you were a second or third generation, it's Casa Grande. There's no pronunciation on it. It's just Casa Grande. And myself, not being raised here and considered a 5-year implant, I guess, if you will, I pronounce it as it is, Casa Grande.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's probably the best way to go, Casa Grande. Yeah. Everyone's happy that way, you know?
That's right.
The old schoolers and the kids.
We have a coffee shop, a great, great little coffee shop restaurant in town called El Grande Restaurant. Big House is a good famous restaurant of ours in downtown Casa Grande. And you know, if you, the translation of Casa Grande is Big House.
And the Big House is east of I-10, basically, isn't it?
It's west of I-10. It's the Big House Cafe and the Cookie Jar are two very popular restaurants in the historic downtown Casa Grande area.
But the real Casa Grande is east of I-10.
That's correct.
And how far east of I-10 is it, if no one's ever gone to see it? And I have driven by and not seen it other than...
So are you referring to the Casa Grande ruins?
Correct.
Yes. So the Casa Grande ruins is actually out in Coolidge. In Casa Grande, the city itself, established in the 1800s, was named after the ruins. At that time, there was nothing in between the two. But now, over the years, so the Casa Grande ruins is approximately 20 minutes out from Casa Grande. If you were to exit that Florence Boulevard in the 10, it's 15 minutes.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about all the RV parks. Apparently, there's lots of them there. To blow up the city during the snowbird season, as we call it, winter visitor season.
Yes, we are definitely a winter visitor attraction area, and that's increasing, as you put earlier in the show, that you know that our name's getting out there. We've got people that come in and say, hey, they used to stay up in Mesa, stay up in the Gilbert area, and they stayed here one time. They're like, hey, we're coming back here just because it's you're close enough to the proximity to get up to those areas, but yet you're not, your home away from home is Casa Grande because of the small town authentic feel. And we have over 15 RV parks and resorts. We have 1,500 to 2,000. RV spots easily, and some of the RV areas, they also do rentals as well. So some are full hookup, some are both full hookup or dry, and others have some rentals as well. So we've got a little bit for every traveler.
Eric Snyder, the tourism manager, and basically he's at the Casa Grande Chamber of Commerce. Eric is fairly new to that position, but seems to have his handle on what's going on up there, which we would expect to have as we talk to him and continue on here between 8 and 9 o'clock on Tom Moulton's Morning Voice, the director of the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance. I'm filling in for Tom today. Eric Snyder, let me ask you, are there any festivals that are coming up or that we have passed recently that we might either remember for next year or write down for this year?
Yes, absolutely. March 29th of 2026, I believe, is that Saturday. We just got done having our second annual Southwest Taco Festival. And we hold that through the city of Casa Grande. They are kind enough to present their venue at the Dave White Municipal Park. It's a big park area, and in part of that section, we turn into a festival. And it was held this past in March on the 29th of March. So yeah, so next year would be the 28th of March, 2026. We already have that date set up. 12 different taco trucks and sweet trucks. We had Churralicious here. We actually, if anyone know, the Hector's taco truck out of Southern Tucson was our winner for the best taco this year.
Very good.
Yeah, we had a family adult friend zone. We had tons of bounce houses, inflatables, foam party, different yard games. We had three different bands come up. We headlined with McBride and the Ride, but we also had the Guitars Latinas and Power Drive were the other two bands. Just a lot of vendors. And yeah, it was an all-day event Saturday from 3 to 9. And our third annual one is going to be in 2026. It's going to happen the third Saturday in every March is what those dates are going to be.
8:15 on the Morning Voice. We'll take a break and be back to talk to Eric Snyder. And what my thought is, which maybe you care about and maybe you don't, on who Mr. Casagrande is. And I'll give you a little hint. His name is on an off-ramp at I-10. We'll be right back. 8:20, I'm Alan Big Al Kaith, filling in for Tom Moulton, the director of the Southern Arizona Attractions Alliance, the sponsor for this show. Eric Snyder, about 100 miles away from us on a Zoomer, is back, and we have a couple questions for you. One of them is mine. I teased it before the break. Mr. Casagrande, Eric.
Now, I'm going to guess. Can I guess first before he answers
Matt,
the question?
My producer, is going to guess who that might be, and I told him it's an off-ramp exit.
The famous conquistador, Don Francisco Grande.
No.
No?
Nope, it is not. Who is
it,
Eric?
We don't have an exit called that.
No, we do not, but we do have an exit called... Jimmy Kerr Boulevard. Tell us about Mr. Kerr, and is he still alive? I think he is.
Unfortunately, Mr. Kerr did pass this past November.
Oh, my.
Yeah.
Well, up until a couple years ago, I asked about it, and he was still around downtown with his business.
Yeah.
Tell us about him.
Yeah, it was very, very sad this past November of his passing. He is his former mayor of Casa Grande, Pinal County supervisor, and you know, he was just many people knew him as Mr. Casa Grande just for everything he's done for the city.
You have a little history about his business. Didn't he have a business there as well? I'm not sure that he did. I think he did.
I'm not too familiar with the business. Of course, I wasn't, again, because I've only been here for 5 years, I wasn't privy to know him. I unfortunately did not have the opportunity to meet Mr. Casagrande. I knew, but in the late 30s, early 40s, I think it was 1939, he moved here from Tucson, and he was a veteran with the Air Force. And he moved here from Tucson. He was in the Pinal County District 3 supervisor. And he was just known as the go-to person. He just, over the years, he knew everything Casa Grande. And he was the go-to person for any knowledge, any answers, which is fitting for the Mr. Casa Grande.
Sure. Matt Neely, our excellent producer, says that I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, and he would like to ask you this question about a must-see in Casa Grande.
Eric, tell us about this Casa Grande sign park. I've yet to see it, but I've heard and read about it, and it sounds fascinating.
Absolutely, our neon sign park, definitely a must-see. They are all vintage signs. Some are privately owned signs that have been donated to the park. The park is actually ran by the Casa Grande Main Street Association. That is it's a nonprofit association through the Casa Grande Main Street. And they actually run the park, and we've had films filmed at the park. We've had different scenes filmed at that park. We host different events at the park. Our Friday night food trucks in the city are a big event. The Kramer Media Pinal Central, local marketing company here. They have the Greatest of the Grande event that they host there every year, and that actually ties in with our Chamber of Commerce. We do our business after hours, and then November after hours ties in, and we collaborate with them and have it in the one evening there at the Neon Sign Park. But anybody who comes through Casa Grande, that is a must see. It's in downtown, historic downtown Casa Grande. You know, it's a beautiful view during the day, even more spectacular at night with the neon sign lights lit up.
So it is open at night. That would be wonderful.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, that looks like you got a Valley Bank sign and, a couple of Dairy Queen sign I can see, Arizona Edison, a couple of old roadside hotel, motel signs. Looks fantastic. And so there's food trucks
there.
Yeah,
it's just really, it kind of, all those signs tell a little bit of the story of the past, and it just provides a unique backdrop to anyone, you know, especially those influencers out there on Instagram and Facebook, TikTok. I don't know where they're all at, but I mean, they're just the backdrop, the scenery of those makes for excellent stories.
Well, it's a nice repository here in Tucson. We have a tendency to leave them kind of in situ. Even if the business changed, they kind of leave the old sign in place. But I like this, where you can kind of go and visit everything in one stop and maybe have a bite to eat while you're there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we, like I said earlier in the show, plenty of RV parks. We have plenty of hotels. You know, we like to think Casa Grande is kind of your home away from home. We're so centrally located between Phoenix and Tucson, and you know, within a couple of hours you could be in Globe, you could be in Tombstone, you could be in Bisbee, an additional hour you could be in Jerome or Sedona. So we really are just kind of your home base while you're visiting Central Arizona, Southern Arizona.
Eric, do you ever reach out to people that would like to retire in Arizona, but Phoenix is too big and Tucson has things that they don't like, for whatever reason that is? And do you just position yourself as, we're a town of 65,000, much like your hometown. We're not a million. We're not 4 million. And you can get to either a town of 1 million or 4 million pretty quick.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And we're definitely, we definitely do showcase the small town feel that we have here in Casa Grande and the family environment. But like you said, within an hour, you can be in the hustle and bustle if you miss that, if you want that. The different attractions that are within an hour drive from us. Day trips are awesome with us being the home base because, like I said, you know, there's so many attractions. You can go to the big cities. You can go to the biosphere. You can go to zip line, the Arizona zip lines. You can go down to Tombstone or Bisbee, or if you want to go the other way to Flagstaff or Prescott, or just even into downtown Phoenix, or downtown Tucson. Either one, it's all within a short drive. And when you're done with all of that hustle and bustle, you come back here and you're back into the small town life.
What do you think of the strategy that Phoenix has and as Tucson has in terms of getting people to visit us? This is not a knock on either city, but obviously you see things that we don't see, and you think, gee, we're not going to do that. What do you think that we could do better at in Tucson, and what does the Maricopa County Chamber of Commerce think that you think they could do better at?
I'm not going to speculate on what I think they can do better at, because I don't believe that either chambers can do anything for better or for worse. You know, there's every chamber, every destination management organization, which is what we are for the city of Casa Grande for tourism through the Arizona Office of Tourism. We all have a different mission statement. We all have a different idea of our growth, and we all have a different city. You know, because the growth that we have here isn't just from the Chamber and the tourism. It's also in collaboration with the city. And I think those other areas also have those collaborations. And I think, you know, will Casa Grande ever be the size of Phoenix and Tucson? Inevitably, unfortunately, yeah. They will. I think progress over the hundreds of years have shown us that it, you mentioned at the beginning of the show that possibly one day, maybe in our lifetime, maybe not, that there will be a continuation of Phoenix to Casa Grande to Tucson. There's a couple of Indian reservations that got to get on board with that first, but you know, that's that, that there's a possibility there. So I don't know if that answers your question, but I think that that's the best answer I'm prepared to give.
Yeah, it doesn't. It's an uncomfortable question because basically I'm just asking you to see from your bird's eye view what other places are doing wrong and what maybe you're doing right. And so I get it. And so we'll move on here. What does it mean to be the official DMO, the designated, what does that mean, destination management company?
A destination marketing organization. So that is appointed by the Arizona Office of Tourism. And it actually was, it goes to the city. And so the city actually, you know, we're very honored. The Chamber of Commerce is very honored to have been selected by the city to run the DMO Tourism Office. We are, the Chamber of Commerce is an Arizona Visitor Information Center. So we are a recognized certified AVAC through the Arizona Office of Tourism. So we do have a visitor center. It's open 9 to 5, Monday through Friday here at the Chamber. And then we also have our tourism part of it. And so we are just finishing up our second fiscal year. We run the fiscal calendar. So July 1st, we begin our year 3 of being the DMO for Casa Grande. And like I said earlier, I mean, it's an honor. We're able to steward experiences and the attractions and, you know, bring people into Casa Grande. And our job is to keep them here and show them that they can go out and travel throughout the day to all the many attractions around the Pinal County and various areas, but at nighttime come back home and enjoy our restaurants and our facilities, for whether it be a hotel or RV.
Back in just a little bit with Eric Snyder from the Chamber of Commerce of the town of Casa Grande. 8:34 on the Morning Voice for Tom Moulton. I'm Alan Big Al Kaith in for him today. He got to see a little picture of him on the Zoom call. He's in Tampa, Florida, trying to repair what I would consider bruised egos in Mexico and Canada's tourism industries and try to find a happy way to continue to bring Canadians and Mexican-Americans and Mexicans here to visit us and spend their money. Back to Eric Snyder from the Casa Grande Chamber of Commerce and the tourism manager. Eric, a couple of years have come under your belt. Do you think about what tariffs could mean to the town of Casa Grande? I know that may be a stretch, may not be a stretch. Any discussion of tariffs within the chamber and how it could affect tourism and travel? Oh,
you know, that has not been a conversation that I've been a part of as far as with the executive director or any of the chamber board of directors. There might be some small talk within the city, but I think right now it's just kind of a wait and see how the economy reacts to it and how it affects the tourism industry.
What do you forecast for your tourism season this year in terms of growth and percentage? Was it be 2-3% that you're thinking, or would it be more than that? Do you have benchmarks that you need to hit?
Yeah, you know, I'd like to think, obviously we're getting out of our tourism season right now. You know, we're going into the summertime. So, you know, we start kicking off again really in mid to late September, October is when we start seeing a bunch of winter visitors and not just winter visitors, but tourists themselves. And, you know, we've seen a gradual, I think, year over year, anywhere from a 0.25 to 0.5% increase. So if we can get that up to a 1% this upcoming year, I would be very grateful for that.
And Eric, I think
we will.
Eric, what does that mean, 1%? How many people is that?
You know, as far as number, when we look at the occupancy is in the hotels and the RV parks and just the development in the city, you know, if as far as winter visitors, if we have an increase of approximately 1,000 people, that would be
that'd be about 1%
plus in our books.
Yeah. What do you like to do in Casa Grande?
What don't I like to do? There's many things.
Well, there's got to be something. It's a 6-mile drive. I'm sure you don't like to do, do you?
Yeah. You really hung up on that 6-mile drive, aren't you? No, we've got several golf courses here: the Dave White, Francisco Grande, Mission Royale. We've got a Casa Grande Mountain for hiking and biking, or if you really want the challenge, you can go right down to Picacho Peak and get a great challenge there. We have some great dining experiences here in town. Usually, you know, on my days off, depending again on the weather, if it's once summer comes, you know, it's the outdoors, it's going to the Promenade Shopping Center and, you know, staying in the ACs. But, you know, during the day on beautiful days like this, I personally am a motorcycle rider, and I love to just get out in the open air, and we've got a lot of great motorcycle riding around here. We're actually featured in a couple of articles in Rider Magazine. And just to, you know, just to get out and enjoy the good food that we have, and the climate, the weather is beautiful. Pickleball, there's all kinds of outdoor enthusiasts would love it out here. There's a lot of outdoor things to do.
Couple of questions regarding not the promenade. I got that. That's east of I-10, and it's got all your great mall things in it. You've got a Harkins Theater and a couple of big box department stores. It's great. I've been in there. But then you have the mall that's west of I-10. In fact, both of them west of I-10, one of them at I-8 and I-10 that used to be the Tanger Outlet Center. Remember that?
Yes. Yeah. I visiting here a long time ago, I would go shopping over there.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, Oshkosh Bagosh for my kids. They
That's
had
right.
an outlet
yeah.
center there.
Yeah.
Somehow, in some way, that is no longer a viable mall. And I can't understand it because it's in the perfect spot to be viable.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Have you guys done a little research on that at the Chamber?
Not particularly in that area, but I think, you know, we've had a lot of different projects come out and begin in Casa Grande and not necessarily see it all the way through or have to end. In this case, you know, it was a shopping center that had stores in it, and for whatever reason, it's been closed down for many, many years before I even moved out here. And is it a prime location? It could be for the right investor. And I'm sure if investors are not looking into it now, they certainly will be in the future. You know, especially with, I think you had mentioned Lucid before. And for those listeners who do not know, yes, Lucid's plant is directly here in Casa Grande. And they just, through the bankruptcy, the Nicola out in Coolidge, they just took over that facility as well. So with Lucid coming in and being sustainable, I think that's opened eyes up for a lot of different other industries to come in. And so I think now that growth is sustaining, I believe that future projects will be able to sustain themselves also.
It just seems to me that that is a no-brainer for someone to do something with. I mean, you're right at the confluence of the two major freeways, mm-hmm. You know, in Arizona, I-8 and I-10. I guess you could throw in I-17 as well, but I'd make the case that those are the two major freeways statewide in terms of what you've got going there. And it just doesn't happen every year, you know? I remember.
And that just happens to be the exit, Jimmy Kerr Boulevard exit.
I know.
It's right there. Yep.
And then there's the other mall, the one that had the Hathaway or the fabric slacks company in that's just east of I-10 where the Arco gas station is that always has the cheapest gas in Arizona. I'll go ahead and give you a plug there. That always seems to be the cheapest gas in the state, that Arco. I drive by and I fill up regularly on the way to Phoenix or coming back. What's the story with that mall? That seems like a deserted mall as well.
Well, if we're thinking of the same one, it's now we have a Hobby Lobby there.
Okay.
And we also have an EOS Fitness coming in. And the other section of that mall is also currently being done. It's where the old Kmart was.
Correct, yeah.
Not the old, yeah. Yeah, so we have a Hobby Lobby and EOS Fitness coming in there. And then there are plans for those other units to be filled. I have not heard any public announcement on who and what, but okay. I'm sure that the...
So that one's being refurbed. That one's definitely coming back, is what you're telling
me. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. It's already back. It's half of it's already, like I said, Hobby Lobby is already occupying one the western side of it. So you know, Florence Boulevard runs east and west, or west and east, however you want to look at it. And this mall is on the east side of the 10, and it is on the most western part of it.
Eric, what do you like to do when you come to Tucson?
Well, I like to, we've been to Tombstone a couple of times.
Tucson. No, Tucson.
Oh, Tucson itself. Tucson itself.
Yes, sir. Pretty hard to think of something, huh?
Well, because my funny you said is my girlfriend's mother lives in that area, and so when I go down to visit her, it's my itinerary is already planned out. Really,
yeah.
I don't have much to say and where I'm going for food or anything like that. But we have been down to quite a bit of good restaurants down in there. I have been down to 4th Street, walked around down there. Great little place to just kind of hang out and shop and people watch. But I've also done several things that are outside of the city limits of Tucson.
You know, we're kind of a big deal with the Mexican food industry down here, and also the United Nations designation.
Mm-hmm.
So may want to come and visit us. I'm going to put the pitch on you to come and visit us a little bit more, and we'll probably do the same with you. So
absolutely.
In terms of Phoenix access, the knock on Casa Grande Phoenix is the road isn't wide enough.
Mm-hmm.
Can you discuss and give us the compare and contrast about what's happening with I-10 and the widening project basically north of Casa Grande on the reservation?
Yeah, the Gila River. Is the widening really is right there. The old bridge that's right there, right outside of our Tupi area is being widened to accommodate 6 lanes, 3 each side, currently only 2 each side. In fact, they just recently have started redirecting redirecting the westbound traffic. So going into Phoenix.
Right.
Is now being redirected onto the new
New side. Yes, sir. I drove it last week. Yep.
Yeah, the new side that will ultimately serve the eastbound traffic. So the eastbound traffic bridge is completed, and they've directed the ADOT has directed the westbound traffic onto that bridge, and they've just started basically demolishing and rebuilding the new westbound bridge to come.
Do you have an ETA? Did ADOT give you an ETA on when that bridge will be done and when the widening project is going to be done?
It's definitely going to go through 25. I think the first quarter of 2026 is from my understanding. So sometime in 2026, I don't foresee them being completed, and they're saying they're not going to be, you know, they're saying 2026. So not before 2025 is done.
You know, ADOT and the contractors that ADOT chooses to do roads, usually it's just a handful of either joint ventures or big enough contractors that can do it on their own. If they could completely, and I certainly don't advocate for this, but if they could completely close that bridge, there's no way to do it, but if they could, they could have that thing done probably last year, because they wouldn't have to maintain half the side open at one time. And they can't do it because it's just too important to do. You got to have commerce. You got to have trucks, cars going through there into and out of Phoenix, into and out of Tucson, getting on I-8, getting up I-17. It's just no way to do that job in a pretty way, unfortunately. And it really, that is just the story of construction.
Yeah, that's, and you're absolutely right. And if they could find a way to successfully pull that off, well, then they, Arizona would be a trend starter, wouldn't they?
Yeah, they would.
Other cities would definitely follow in how they were able to pull something like that off. But as you said, there's just too many moving parts to be able to ever have that happen.
We're lucky that they can keep half of it open at one time.
Absolutely.
8:47, we'll take the break and be back with Eric Snyder from the town of Casa Grande Chamber of Commerce and the tourism manager there. Eric is a pretty delightful dude to talk to. I'm Big Al, Alan Kaith, in for Tom Moulton on The Morning Voice. 8:52, in for Tom Moulton, I'm Alan Big Al Kaith, formerly of Channel 9 and several radio stations around town. When I'm asked by Tom or Ed or Grant to fill in, I politely say I'll do the best I can. And usually I can barely hold a small candle to their greatness in terms of what they're doing on the air. Just happy to still be in the game a little bit from time to time. Eric Snyder, Casa Grande Chamber of Commerce, the tourism manager. Eric can be reached at tourism@casagrandechamber.org. Casagrandechamber.org. tourism@casagrandechamber.org. Eric, I'm coming to Casa Grande. What? Give me a custom routing for what you would have me do when I visit Casa Grande. I'm starting with breakfast.
Oh, boy.
You can do it.
Yeah, no, I know I can do it. So
let's do it.
For breakfast, I would start your day, start your morning off at historic downtown Casa Grande. And I can't choose one of the two, so I'm going to give you two options. There's either the Big House Cafe or Cookie Jar, both located in downtown Casa Grande. Would receive a thumbs up 10 from me. After breakfast, either one of those places are close proximity right to that neon park. You could walk right down there, check out the park, check out the lights. The lights won't be on, but check out all the signs and kind of walk around through there. You can also walk through the streets of downtown Casa Grande. We have some murals. We actually have a downtown city tour, kind of a walking tour set up, and you could find that at the Downtown Main Street Association office, which is located right next to the Cookie Jar.
What would I find? What would I find on the walking tour? That big old brick two-story structure there on the north side of the Florence Highway, I'm guessing, right?
Yes. Yeah.
What is that?
We have a lot of older buildings that are still standing, and so there's a lot of history, a lot of cultural there. We have a lot of artwork done on murals and everything like that. So, kind of a walk down the history of Casa Grande, if you will.
What's for lunch?
For lunch, then you could make your way either depending on.
Don't send me to Popeyes.
No Popeyes? No. Okay. Well, let me think of another one. No, I'm just kidding. There's several places to go, for lunch and or dinner. We have El Grande Restaurant would be a great place to go to. We have Hideout Steakhouse over at the Promenade Mall, which actually serves breakfast, lunch, and dinner. Great place. We do have a Texas Roadhouse for those that like the Texas Roadhouse theme. If you're into some taco trucks, if you're here on a Friday, we'll have the Friday night taco trucks. Or we have a fairly newer place, the Casa Collective. And this place has been open for, I think, a little over a year, 2 years now. They're actually a little brewery, but also they have taco trucks that come there to their park area right there and serve food. So you can have some nice craft beer along with a couple different choices for some taco truck eateries. Several different Mexican restaurants in town. So, yeah, If you wanted a pizza, Del's Pizza, great, great local pizza restaurant.
All right. And then any quick recommendation for any weekend fun?
Sure. Yeah, weekend fun. You can come out and take a little day trip if you're an adventure seeker. We're not far from the Arizona zip lines. If you skydive Arizona also, if even to watch, even if you don't plan on jumping out of a perfectly good engine airplane, they have the a little bar and grill right there. And they have an actual area where spectators can sit there and watch all the divers come into the landing area right there.
Eric, it's been great to talk to you. I appreciate it. We're running out of time. You know what that's like. And I'm grateful for your conversation today. I appreciate it. And I'll come visit you.
Very good. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Eric Snyder from the Casa Grande Department of Tourism. Eric, thanks a lot. For Tom Moulton, I'm Alan Kaith. Dr. Ackerley, my good friend, will be on tomorrow. We'll see you when we see you.